My name is Victor Kubik, President of the United Church of God, and welcome to Inside United. Today we have with us Dr. Steve Britt. Welcome.
Thank you, Vic. It's good to be back, and I'm excited about our topic today.
Right, I am too. The spirit in man. And also related to it is consciousness. You know, the fact that we not only exist, but we're also aware that we exist. I mean, there's one thing about existing like a frog, you know, and being able to jump and do different things and decide where you're going to jump, but also to be conscious of yourself and, you know, what you are. Now, here's a couple questions here, Steve.
All right, fire away.
Okay. Why is consciousness, which is so obvious and vital to our human existence, so difficult for scientists to pin down and study?
Yeah. I mean, this is a really interesting, it's been called the hard problem of consciousness. I think that phrase was coined in the 90s by researchers. The scientists are looking at their personal experience, the experience of all mankind recorded through history and our writings, and there's something there that they have no real way to observe. In fact, they can't even agree on what consciousness is, let alone set up a way to observe it. For that matter, we have things like IQ tests to measure intelligence, and the dirty secret is we don't even know what intelligence is, really. Now we're hearing all about emotional intelligence and other ways that our minds function that are beyond the rigid constructs that, you know, people thought they had pinned down 100 years ago. Even those are opening up. The reason, in my opinion, is that they're reaching out with physical tools of observation and trying to grasp at something that is spiritual in nature, something that comes from God.
I know that they may say, well, we don't want to get into that world unless you can measure it, mm-hmm. unless you can taste it and so forth, that we don't want to deal with it. But obviously, they know that you can't do that about consciousness. I mean, yes, you could measure certain metrics of consciousness, but can you put a tape measure around it and define it? It is so right in your hands and it's gone.
Right. And scientists are having to go into the realm of philosophy to try to look for insight into how any of this works to find something that could be measurable.
Well, one thing, just might as well come shooting straight from the gate here. In the very first chapters of the book of Genesis, mm-hmm. it says that God breathed into the man soul. You know, he breathed into man spirit. You know, this consciousness. Before that, he was just dirt.
Right. And right. Dust you are, and to dust you shall return.
It's just like when we go to a funeral and there's an open casket and they have that person. It's so eerie because right. you see them and it's kind of, you know, that spirit, that breath of life is gone. There's nothing there.
Right. Is it really just the thing that makes our lungs move and makes our heart pump, or is there something else at work? So an interesting distinction to make is that between the life that man has and the life that animals have. No other creature has developed anything like a civilization. You know, you might have a colony of chimps here or there who use tools in a certain way, but the elements of understanding, abstract thought, and reasoning just seem to be completely lacking in animals. And so seeing, just looking around and saying, well, hey, we seem to be the only creature that can do these special things. Well, why would that be? And then you look in the Bible and see, oh, well, we were made differently.
And yet we see in animals a real awesome ability to be extremely perceptive and engineering. For example, yeah. you know, beavers. You know, you have beavers, you know, they'll dam up creeks at the right place mm-hmm. in the right way, you know, to build homes and to dam them up. In fact, in some parts of the world, I was very interested that they brought in beavers to be able to properly mm-hmm. dam up a place because the human engineers, you know, had trouble figuring it out. And the beavers could figure it out
yeah.
because it's written in there, it's scripted into their consciousness, you know, to be that way through an instinct.
Yeah, exactly. And I was going to say that exact word, instinct, was on the tip of my tongue, because there is a difference. You know, there's a lot that even human beings do by instinct. And then there are the more significant things that we do that are not by instinct. You mentioned the frog at the beginning in your intro that can jump and then decide where to jump. But the way that a frog decides where to jump, you know, a frog would never stop and say to itself, well, you know what, today I want to try to do a backflip, you know, just for the fun of it. Frogs don't don't do that kind of thing. It's just something that's lacking from animals that, you know, humans, you see people doing foolish things like trying to do backflips all the time.
Well, human beings try to improve as well. You know, yeah. They try to do things that are pushing the limits. And
the ability to think through and really plan, you know, the way a beaver builds a dam, there's something ingrained about it where they have limitations that they as beavers can't overcome. Whereas it seems by deliberate human thought and by abstract reasoning that there's, you know, like it said in the Tower of Babel, nothing's impossible for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's been such an explosion of it here. It's what's called the fourth industrial revolution, you know, to mm-hmm. where from the very first IBM PC that I bought back in about 1982 or so, you know, and when I was so happy to have 64K of RAM, now, you know, it's exponentially increasing and memory is expanding.
Which you have to go up like six orders of magnitude to get to a number that's
acceptable. and also these things are inventions that are creating other inventions just by using these inventions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Steve, one thing that really is kind of has gnawed at my mind, if there was no other, you know, outside force, what is it that makes good and evil? I mean, you know, just is that also something that's a random thing, good and evil? Is it an invention, and how come it's passed down?
Yeah, right. So we keep coming back to this materialist worldview, where if you see things as just a bunch of meaningless chemicals, then fundamentally, if they really think through their the implications of those statements, there is no wrong and right. None of it matters except for self-preservation, and self-preservation doesn't even matter because the universe is going to go on anyway. So there's that whole perspective that has to be fought against. But on the other hand, the other thing you brought out is the increased capacity for both good and evil. So for us, you know, we are Bible-believing people, and we believe in the God of the Bible that defined right from wrong, and that it is an absolute standard that exists outside of just our own moral musings and the work of philosophers. But to see this technology that allows, in some cases, for a lot more good to be done than could ever be done before. Cures for horrible diseases, horrible crippling diseases, and life-ruining diseases. That's something that we've seen come to fruition in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, great destructive power, unlike anything that's ever been known. We thought, I wasn't alive, but people thought when the nuclear bomb was created that that was the height of destructive power that humanity would ever reach, and this is the end. Wow. Well, since then, we've come a long way in increasing man's destructive capability, and it's only getting worse in that regard.
Well, it's coming to a point of where we have a small orb that we live on. It's limited, you know,
mm-hmm.
and once that's gone, it's gone. You know, I mean, there's no place to be.
Yeah.
There's no environment. We can't just move off to another world. So civilization is on its precipice. But getting back to the original questions that we had about the spirit in man, you know, just
yes.
the functionality of it, you know, it's obviously not some kind of gas or some type of physical thing that you can squirt, you know, into a body, but it's something that's there. It's amazing what the Apostle Paul wrote in the book of Corinthians about teaching the people about the Spirit of God, which mm-hmm. was like a contrast or a parallel line of genre things. Here's the Spirit of God, and here's the Spirit, mm-hmm. you know, in man. So a comparison of the two, which has amazing similarities as far as functionality, because God himself calls himself Spirit. You know, God, in a sense, God is that life. God is that ultra soul, you know, you might say,
yeah.
that has always existed. We don't understand that. We don't have concept of that, but that was the source of life. And I think that as we're finding out, no matter how man tries to create immortality, well, he may be able to lengthen himself, lengthen mm-hmm. his existence. He cannot seem to find that spark to start it, no matter how that's been tried. But in the book of Corinthians, in 1 Corinthians 2, in verse 10, talking about some of the spiritual concepts that we understand, is that God has revealed them to us through his Spirit. For the Spirit searches all things, yes, the deep things of God. For what man knows the things of a man except the spirit of the man which is in him? I find this to be fascinating. God's Spirit reveals to us matters dealing with definitions of spiritual things that many people don't simply have the tools. Just like the spirit in man defines through measurement mm-hmm. or through observation the things that are man's.
Yeah, I think that's really an amazing insight into this whole investigation, is that, you know, God says that my thoughts are not your thoughts and my ways are not your ways. And when he says that, he means that on a level of just, he's so much higher above us that we can't understand how he thinks until we also have that spirit. And that's what Paul was getting at there. And, you know, it talks about how who knows the things in man except the spirit of man that's in him. As humans, we each have access to that spirit. And so we understand how other people function. And we deal with that every day, whether we want to or not, in most cases. But you're right. Without that spirit of God, we cannot and will not understand how God functions.
But in the meantime, we have this spirit in man, which has kind of an artificial ceiling. You know, we kind of bang our head against mm-hmm. our level to comprehend. And you take a look at some fantastic scientists. To me, one of my favorite was Carl Sagan, you know, and the things that he said, you know, or, you know, others here that have said some marvelous things and made some marvelous observations, but they were all based upon measurement and observable things.
Right.
But there is a ceiling above that, you know, a floor above that, that contains another world of knowledge that is not fake, it's real. In fact, it's more real than the one we have.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the spirit in man is almost the, almost like an interface between the physical and the spiritual, the things of man that we see and can observe, and the things of God, because that's the essence that gives us the ability to think and reason, which is a trait and characteristic of God. You know, when we're created in his image, that's one way that we're like him, that we can think and reason as he does. And that's, you know, for our benefit, so that we can become his children. And there's a great purpose to us having that.
Well, it's, you know, it's amazing that God says that we have been created in his image. And that is only the tip of the iceberg, you know, as far as the fact that we have a nose and ears and eyes and have that appearance. We're not a turtle. You know, God is not, you know, to the turtles, there isn't some great turtle image, you know, that they view, because they can't even comprehend that. But for human beings, that imagery has been given there. We have a God who speaks to us. We got who holds us. We got who cares for us. And there's been a kind of a intimate relationship created by this fact that we, you know, are similar. But the amazing thing is that it's not just that particular likeness. It's the thinking. It's the reasoning ability. It's the creativity.
Right. And, you know, you even mentioned just then that God speaks to us. And part of this whole, wrapped up in this whole equation, is the topic of language. It's something that's unique to humans as far as we can tell, that we have language and the ability to think and construct these abstract thoughts. We use language as a tool to accomplish that, and we tend to just take that for granted. But it's really an amazing gift. And if you look at, you know, God, he created everything through speech. He said, "Let there be light," and it was so. And so language is a fundamental part of who God is and the way he reveals himself, and that's a gift that he shared with us.
Well, this has been very, very wonderful talking about this subject. And next time that we talk, I'd like to go into more of the biblical references to the spirit in man.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds great.
Okay, well, thank you, Steve, for being with us on Inside United podcast. We hope that you come back for more. Steve has been a very interesting guest, and we want to hear more from him. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Vic.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.